Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, June 16th, 2013. This is episode 988. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders. I'm going to turn my cell phone off right now. Wouldn't want it ringing in the middle of the show. Home theater and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. Our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, will be joining us at about 33 after the top of the second hour, if that isn't confusing. We'll talk about all sorts of stuff. I want to, I guess, start with Apple's big announcement on Monday, the WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference. This is the only keynote Apple schedules every year. I mean, they're will probably be more in the fall. If last year is a guide, of course, last year they did two events in the fall. In September, they did an iPhone 5, remember? And in October, they announced a new iPad. So I presume they're going to do something somewhat similar, but you never know. They don't tell you ahead of time. What did they announce this week? Well, this week, it was really a show for developers. So they talked a lot about future stuff, the new iOS 7, the next version of the operating system for the iPhone and the iPad. They talked about the new OS 10, the new operating system for computers. They did show two new computers, MacBook Airs. These are based on the new Intel chips, the Haswell, that I've been singing the praises of. You might remember I've been saying, wait to buy a computer because the new fourth generation Intel Core is coming out and it will be great. And it is, you know, I mean, it's a ULT part, which means it's ultra low something. I don't know. It's a low power chip. And that means it's going to give you incredible battery life. Apple's claiming 9 hours for the 11-inch MacBook Air and 12 hours of battery for the 13-inch. That's pretty amazing. But what they didn't do and disappointed a lot of people, they didn't announce new MacBook Pros. We thought they'd do new Retina displays based on the Haswell chip. And they showed something really goofy, the Mac Pro that they're going to put out in the fall. The Mac Pro hasn't been updated for 2.5 years. I know because I have a 2.5-year-old Mac Pro. It is the big tower machine that pros bought, sound designers. You know, you see them everywhere in music studios, video editors using Final Cut. That's what they would use. And, you know, they'd attach a bunch of stuff to it. But it was really getting long in the tooth. It had old processors, old video cards, and it didn't have Thunderbolt, which is the port Apple has replaced FireWire with. So, I mean, it was getting pretty long in the tooth. In fact, a lot of pro users of Macintoshes were wondering if Apple was planning to abandon them. Video editors in Hollywood even started moving off of Apple to Windows machines running Premiere or heavily modified Macs running Avid, leaving Final Cut in the dust behind them. So they announced, Apple, you know, announced, you know, usually you don't pre-announce a computer except that you really can't kill sales for the old Mac Pro since it is so old. So they said, well, what the heck, we'll give you a peek at what we're doing. The new Mac Pro, which looks oddly like Darth Vader's trash can. I don't know exactly how to describe it. It's a extruded black cylinder about 9.9 inches. I guess that's close enough to 10. 10 inches tall. That's not very tall, is it? It's shorter than a piece of paper. Take an inch off a piece of paper. That's how tall it is. So it's a little cylinder. And you might wonder, well, gosh, how expandable can that be? Not at all. It is not an expandable device, which is really, I think, all the pros really wanted. Just take that old design. We don't care about design. We care about power. Put more new stuff in. Put Thunderbolt on it. Let us expand it. Instead, Apple gave them this trash can. It's going to be, I tell you what it is. It's not going to sell well. It's going to be the world's most expensive home theater PC because it'll be nice and quiet. Very powerful. You don't really want to expand it because to expand it, you just have to hang things off of it. So all that pretty design is going to be hit anyway on a shelf or behind or underneath the desk or somewhere, which is guaranteed that somebody's going to try to throw trash in it. It's just sitting there waiting for trash. And we don't know how much or when it'll be available, but I could tell you just looking at it. Have you looked at it? It says one word, screams one word out loud. Expensive. The unified thermal core means we only have one fan at the top, sucking air, drawing in air from the bottom and pushing it up through the middle. Two video cards, not one, two. A solid state drives. And you know what? When you turn it around, the ports light up. If you're a pro, you've just got to, yes, that's good. Heather's giving it a slow clap. I like the slow clap.
We salute you.
Yeah. What the heck? This is a non-starter, if you ask me. The pros I've talked to said, huh? It's not what we wanted. And then to show how on the defensive Apple is, Phil Schiller, the director of marketing at Apple, the senior vice president for marketing at Apple, guy who's been there since Scully. I think this was ad-lib, but I don't know. Who knows? They might have planned it. Said, can't innovate my doop. My tush, while he was showing this off. See, we're innovative. Can't innovate my... Because I guess he was maybe a little stung by some of the reports from the trade press, the tech press, saying that Apple's lost its touch. It can't innovate. Can't innovate my tuchus, he says. Well, yeah, that's innovation, I guess. I never saw anything like it. You know, one thing, it's interesting because the history of Apple is very interesting. Even going back to the Apple II computer, then you can read this. I should pull the biography of Steve Jobs down off the shelf from Walter Isaacson. You can read it right there. Jobs was unhappy with the look of the Apple, the original designs for the Apple II, because it was designed board first. This is how most computers are designed. You wonder why your computer's a square box? Because the engineers designed the motherboard, the logic board, and the parts that go into it. And guess what? It's square because they're engineers. Straight lines, baby. Two sides. Function is it. They're not thinking about design at all. It's all function. And then in traditional computer companies, the design team comes along and says, well, how do we put that in a box? Steve Jobs sent it back on even going back to the Apple II and said, no, you're going to design the circuit boards to fit my curvy design. You saw it with the Mac as well. He said, design is more important. The design, and this is a, boy, if you look at the new Mac Pro, this is a company run by designers, not engineers. You got to admire the design. I'm not saying it's not beautiful. And you know, I'm such a sucker, I'll probably buy one. But really, it's not what the pros, I guarantee you. And then let's talk about the design of iOS. Have you seen it yet, Heather? Because Heather, you're an iPhone user. You're the natural...
Yeah, I was really surprised at you saying it was...
It looks like Nicki Minaj designed it.
Like, I match it.
It's cotton candy, and you do match it, by the way. Thank you for dressing.
I thought it was gorgeous, though.
Really?
And I'm not such a pastels person, but it lights up so nicely, and I was like, oh, sexy, and I can't wait to see my weather done like that.
Okay. See, they know their audience, and you're obviously their audience. So,
I guess.
So I'm wrong. it isn't the most ugly design I've ever seen. It burns my eyes, but hey, if you're happy, I'm happy. It does. It looks like cotton candy. You know the three colored cotton candy they sell at the ballpark. That's what it looks like. And then it has all this cellophane translucence that slides over it, and then the cotton candy shimmers underneath. And all the lettering's nice and thin, which they completely stole, by the way, from Microsoft. Somebody wrote an article today, probably one of the tech blogs that I read, that said, Microsoft won. This was the design Microsoft decided to go with, this Swiss design, thin Helvetica fonts and, you know, flat, no curves, no rounded corners, no gradients, no shadows, no drop shadows. And yeah, that's what it looks like. You know, there's only one reason. By the way, I don't mean to focus on the design, because really that's personal taste, right? And if you love it, that's great. But what Apple wants you to do is pay attention to the design and ignore the fact that they've added virtually nothing to this system. And that's really what needs to happen, I'm afraid. 8888 Ask Leo. Call me. Tell me how wrong I am. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a loser, baby, and you're not going to buy it. Beck knew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you to Nathan, our great musical director. Heather H. is here, our call screener, wearing, I am thrilled to see, a Mavericks shirt. That is exactly OS X Mavericks. So they ran out of big cats. In fact, Craig Federighi, I think it was, on stage said, hey, we're not going to hold up OS X just because we've run out of big cats. So we're changing our code names. Which, unlike a lot of companies, every company has a code name for its operating system, but they don't use them. You know, Vista was Longhorn. They don't use it, you know, but Apple does. So we knew we had Lion, now we have Mountain Lion, and the next one is not going to be a kitty cat or a big cat. It's going to be a California state. I don't think they're just going to do beaches. California place names. And the first one is Mavericks, which is a little, even in do you think Californians even know what Mavericks is, let alone the rest?
Oh,
they do.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's a very, we know in Northern California, just over on the coast here, it's a surf destination. It's not somewhere, you wouldn't go to the beach there. You'd freeze your buns off.
I think so.
And people, it's scary.
Yeah, people have gotten hurt. I think that's how it has the notoriety it
right.
has now.
It's a big, what do they call it, break. So I wonder if – now, they're pretty much clear that they're going to do California. I wonder if they're going to – you know, like next will be like maybe Malibu. You know, that would be good.
Yeah.
OS X Malibu would be kind of cool. OS X Point Lobos. How about OS X straight out of Compton?
Yes.
Yes. The urban OS X.
Ocean Beach. Where the waves are lame, but there's always a lot of people in the water.
Yeah. They've used beach names before. Remember, the first iMac was, the color of it was called Bondi Blue, after the Australian beach, Bondi Beach. I don't know. Mavericks is a weird name to me, but I think they're trying to emphasize that they're Mavericks, which they're not, by the way. Can I just say Apple is rapidly becoming the most conservative computing company out there? Rapidly. Rapidly. They have. Well, that's what happens when you're successful. There's somebody wrote an article with a theory, and I think this is true, that when companies get – as soon as a company builds a massive billion-dollar world headquarters, that's when they're beginning the end, the beginning of the end, because they do that at the peak, right? Apple's building a $2 billion spaceship campus in Cupertino. Incidentally, Facebook doing something very similar. Those are companies that are at their peak, and, you know, if history is guide, the peak is the place where you start to go downhill, unless there's another peak down the way. But
how do we know when we've peaked?
You don't know when you peak. How do you know? You only know in hindsight. Heather Hammon, who should I take first? What call should I take? Is there anybody who's mad at me for dissing the godhead that is Apple?
Not yet, but I'm looking, and I'm keeping an open line just for that. But Jeff in Spokane does have a problem with an iMac.
I would love to talk to him. Hey, Jeff, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. Hi. Love your show. Love all your podcasts and everything.
Bless you. Thank you for calling.
I have a couple questions. One is I run Google Chrome, your recommendation.
Yep.
And my bookmarks seem to be like all whacked out. And I don't know if you know of anything like that or any problems like that.
Whacked out. Now, So you're using it on multiple platforms?
Yes. Well, it's all on Mac stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, on like different Macintoshes, maybe an iOS device or two. And if you use, you can tell Chrome that I want to synchronize my bookmarks, everything actually, extensions. It's one of the nice things that Chrome, one of the things I really like about Chrome is the sync. And you can set the settings to sync everything from apps, bookmarks, autofill, settings, themes, even, you know, so I have a theme I like. I set my Chrome on my desktop to that theme. It has that theme everywhere, even on iOS.
Right.
So yeah, what's happening? So what's happening with your?
Well, on like my bookmarks, I'll have like my bookmarks, and then I'll have another row underneath them of the same ones over and over and over, and it's just like repeating.
Right. Yeah, synchronization. You know, this there's an analog for this with your contacts. You know, you have contacts in four different places, and you sync them, and all of a sudden you got four different copies of the same thing. And that's because if you think about it, sync is hard to do. The problem is that when you did, at some point when you were doing sync, you changed bookmarks on multiple platforms at roughly the same time, and Chrome goes, well, I can't delete some and save others, so I'm going to save them all.
And I think one of the problems was I had that LastPass, what is it called, sync, the one that they bought, LastPass.
Oh, Xmarks.
Xmarks, yes.
Yeah, take out. Okay, so that's the first thing to do is turn off all the other bookmark syncs.
Yeah, and I did that, but I think I
must have. And now go to like the machine you use the most. Let's make that the home machine and clean the bookmarks up. It's not going to be so hard to delete the, you know, the folder with the folder with the folder with the folder. Just go into the bookmark manager. They have a you don't want to do it, you know, by hand from the front page, but manage your bookmarks, which is under the bookmarks menu. And and just kind of clean it up.
Okay.
And then I believe it will then sync from that point on cleanly. Don't before anything syncs, don't open any other Chromes. Like just say this is it and sit for a while and let it kind of get the sync. Worst case, you could if it doesn't clean it up is actually this is what I would do. After you clean it up, just export it once. Okay.
Okay.
Export to HTML file. That's now an exported, cleaned up bookmark folder. That's a good backup. And if it doesn't clean everything up, then delete bookmarks from everything and import the bookmarks on one Chrome. And that's kind of the hardcore way of fixing this. But I got to tell you, just using Chrome all the time as I do, once it works, it doesn't have a problem in the future.
Okay. Great. The other question I had, I just bought a new Mac, iMac. It's not brand new. It's used from somebody else. And I have a MacBook, and everything in my house is Apple. The iPad, the iPhone, and, of course, the Apple TV. What I want to do is, and I have the Apple AirPort Extreme with a 1 terabyte drive hooked up to it. Yeah. And I kind of want to sync everything so it all is the same. Do you have an easy way to do that?
You want all of the devices to have exactly the same setup and apps and everything.
Sure, and I don't know if I should run like my iTunes whole media library on the external drive and just go from there.
Well, the first thing I would do is go out and get a free program called Super Duper.
Yep, I got it.
Okay. That will let you make an image copy of, I would do it of all the drives, just in case this goes haywire.
Okay.
So you have an image, a single file. It'll be a DMG file or no IMG file of each of those drives that you have.
Okay.
Then the only issue is going to be the operating system because there are slight differences in different hardware, right?
Sure.
So then I guess what you could do is wipe them all, install the most recent operating system that each piece of hardware can handle. If it's Mountain Lion, go all the way up to Mountain Lion.
Okay, that was another question.
Yeah, I would.
I can't on my MacBook, but on these iMac, I can't.
Older stuff you can't. Go as late as you can in general.
Okay.
And then I think you could restore from one of the Super Dupers, not all of them, the one you like, to all of the rest of them. Not overwrite the system files. That should get you where you want to be. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Andrea is in Los Angeles. Our next caller listening to the 50,000-watt blowtorch of Southern California, the great KFI. Hi, Andrea.
Hi there. I have a Mac desktop OS X. like an older version, and I'm moving back to Europe permanently. I'm backing up my time machine on an external hard drive, and so I'm kind of debating to buy an iPad or something, but I'm not sure if I would be able to recover my data on an iPad.
No, well, no. Short answer is no. Completely okay. Different platforms. Okay. So you don't want to bring the computer with you, just the backup?
Well, I mean, it's a desktop, so it'd be a little bit tricky.
You're going to leave it behind. So probably what, you know, one thing you could do is to get a laptop, get a MacBook Air. The new MacBook Airs just came out.
I thought about that, but I'm moving to Germany. So, and
there's no electricity there. I know. It's a pro- no, I know.
What? No, but the, you know, the settings, they have different letters.
Ah. So it would be- oh, well, wait till you get to Germany then and do it.
I'm sorry?
Buy it in Germany then.
Yeah, but I'm like, I was wondering, should I just back everything up on my my backup here on...
Yeah, take the time machine with you. Or you said you put it on a second hard drive. You're gonna. You sounds like you're going to leave the time machine behind too, right?
I'm taking the, well, the time machine, but the hard drive. I'm just, I kind of wanted to have everything ready to make sure.
Here's what you should do. The same thing I told the last guy, actually. There's a great program. It's free. You can pay for more features, but the free will do what you need. It's called Super Duper. And it's a little bit better than Time Machine because what it does is it's gonna take a freeze-dried copy of what's on your hard drive. Like just everything, including the operating system and everything, and put it, and you could put it on a, it depends on how much data you have, but, you know, if you don't have a huge amount of data, you could even put it on a little USB thumb drive. And what would happen is whatever that, put it on a USB drive of some kind. That thing you could boot to from any Macintosh, you could boot up because it becomes a bootable image of your hard drive, and it would look just like you're using your home, your computer right now. Everything.
So, okay,
and then so when you have, and then take that to Germany, and then if you get a new computer, you can't, it won't work on an iPad. You're gonna have to get a computer, a Mac.
Yeah, I would get a computer there, but yeah. I just like, oh, that's all the data. Is that
everything's there?
Possible?
Yeah.
Get it on a USB drive.
Well, I don't know how much data you have.
Maybe 4 gigabytes.
Yeah, easy. No problem. Get the whole thing on. You get everything on a get a 32. You can get a 32 gigabyte USB. Thumb drive for $50. You could put it all on there. You could put it in your pocket. Get it. Bring it to Germany. Buy a new computer. Now, there's one trick. You do want to have the German version of OS 10, and because you know you want it to be in German and all of that. So don't restore the old operating system on top of the new one. But do restore all your data, and you're good to go.
Okay. So I restore my data after
when you get the new computer. You just plug in the Super Duper drive. And you can restore what you want. You know, if it's only 4 gigabytes, you don't even need a drive. You could just use something like Dropbox. They give you 5 gigabytes for free. Have everything copied to Dropbox. You don't have to bring anything with you. You could go naked to Germany, and then when you get there, buy a computer, log into your Dropbox account, and copy everything back.
Mm-hmm.
Use the cloud.
Okay. So can I ask you real quick about I'm doing the same thing with my phone?
Sure, Andrea.
I have the Galaxy S3.
Okay.
And I'm using T-Mobile.
Okay.
And so I guess I want to make sure I have everything saved. I'm taking the phone with me.
You should be fine. You should be fine. You shouldn't have to even, so Google backs it up automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about that. Make sure in your settings that it's checked where it says, should Google back up all your stuff? Because then all your data is backed up, all your apps are backed up, and all of that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
sounds good.
So I think you can, and your phone should work in Germany. Hey, T-Mobile is Deutsche Telekom. I think you should be able to just take
it. Yeah, but I think I just have to change the account.
You put a new SIM. You'll put a German SIM in there, yeah, which will give you a German phone number and all that. Are you leaving us for good, Andrea?
I think I am.
Oh, I'm sad. So the movie career didn't work out?
Not quite. Family emergency.
Oh, so. I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, yeah. You could take everything with you. I understand you don't want to take the desktop with you, but you could certainly take the phone. Take your time machine with you. That's a backup. If you have another backup, you could easily just put it on the. If it's only 4 gigs, you could just put it on the internet.
Okay.
Safe travels.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Andrea.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Take care, Steve in Mill Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, a little frustrated, but not as much as when I started this phone call. I kind of saw part of the problem.
So you're on the hold, and you're typing away.
Yeah.
You know, we try to keep you on hold a minimum of 45 minutes, giving you enough time to fix the problem.
I know the drill.
Apparently, I just didn't hold you long enough.
Well, yes.
What's going on?
Okay, I bought a brand new Windows 8 Acer laptop. And the first thing I wanted to do was to back it up after I got things updated and so forth. My backup program, Acronis True Image, current version, could see my backup drive, USB backup drive, but not my internal drive. Then I disabled Secure Boot and the new firmware system they have now, EFI.
Yeah.
And did a legacy boot as well.
Yeah.
And that didn't help.
Yeah, that's only for the bootable operating system. That's if you wanted to, for instance, put Linux on that laptop, you'd have to do that. But to copy data, did you want to boot to the external drive or just copy the data over?
Just want to copy the data to the external drive.
It's odd that Acronis can't understand that internal drive.
Well,
are you running Acronis from within that Windows on that Acer?
I was booting to the rescue disk.
Ah. Don't do that.
Okay.
Boot to the Acer. And run Acronis from the Acer.
Okay.
Then you'll have no trouble.
But how do I restore if it can't see the drive?
It will see the drive. You have to install Acronis on the Acer.
Yes, but if the drive had to be, say, replaced or was damaged, I'd have to install it to a drive that the system can't see.
Oh, no, don't worry. The system can see it. I think it's because you're booting up from a USB drive.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not.
I'm booting to the I'm booting to first the CD, the Acronis Rescue CD.
Oh yeah. First of all, it probably is the case that Acronis is not updated for Windows 8. Windows 8 boot is different.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So boot from the machine.
Okay.
Don't boot from some other device because it's not going to work.
If I had to restore my machine because it broke, say to a blank hard drive.
No. Then there's ROM stuff. It would work. Don't worry about that.
Okay. I mean, I even put the internal hard drive into a separate desktop computer, Windows 7, and it couldn't see it there either.
Oh, well, that I don't know about.
I don't either. These new types of partitioning scheme, so they allow...
No, Windows 7 should see it just fine.
Yeah, but
You have a recent version of Acronis?
2013. Currently, latest updates as of April.
And when you say Windows 7, it's on a different machine?
Yeah, different machine, so I just put it in as a second drive, boot as always.
I don't know. I can't. I haven't... Something's wrong. That's big help, isn't it? Let me think about this. We'll talk some more when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know what the answer is to this question, but I think we have people in the chat room who are going to help us. But meanwhile, I'm going to tell you about ShareFile. How about that? ShareFile.com is the way to share files. Ooh, seems like they got a good name there. This is from Citrix. Now, why would Citrix invent a new way to share files? Because the old way doesn't work. That's why. Have you tried emailing files lately? First of all, it's insecure. The NSA is all over it. Second of all, isn't that funny? The government regulations say that if you're mailing patient records, say you're a doctor, you're mailing patient records, that you can't just use email. Why? Because then the government could get them. See, not with ShareFile. ShareFile is encrypted, secure transit. It's not in email. You send a link, a secure HTTPS link. In fact, you can password protect the file. You can say who can access it. You can control the level of permissions they have. It syncs automatically. So you and your team always have the most updated materials. You have your ShareFile folders, which sync. You can access it from anywhere. I have ShareFile on my phone. Not the data, just the program, so I can say, oh, let me go to my share file in the cloud. Here, let me send this file. I use this all the time to send audio to radio stations. But if you send contracts, spreadsheets, presentations, patient records, pleadings, that kind of thing, you know you have to keep them safe and secure and under your control. Email attachments just won't work, not to mention the problem with bounce backs. It is completely secure. And look, they customize it for over 30 different industries, so including engineering, financial, medical, government, legal. I always laugh when I see files and letters from, emails from lawyers that say, this is a privileged communication. Don't read it if it's not for you. Yeah, right. That's got to work. Hey, stop reading this. They should be using ShareFile. So should you. You try it free. Click the try it free button at the top of the page and enter our offer code TECHGUY, and you'll be 30 days free of ShareFile. Honest to goodness, there are other ways. I know there are many ways to do this, but this is the secure file transfer built for business. ShareFile.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So after consulting with my brain trust, that's all those people in the chat room, the chatters. In fact, I should mention, Steve, in Mill Valley, there's a guy in the chat room from Acronis, does Acronis support, so you could go into the chat room and talk to him. But here's what apparently is the case. Steve has a disk image. This has been disk image hour, hasn't it? Super duper, Acronis. Making an image of your drive, it's always a good thing. It's not your only backup, but it is a good thing to do as kind of a way to get things back up and running. Let's say your operating system drive dies, you want to get back in business, you have a disk image, you can just restore it. Acronis does require that you boot from the CD, the install disk, and it does not have all the latest drivers. So the best guess that we have going on here is that it's just not compatible. It doesn't have the SATA driver yet.
I would agree with that because while I was on hold, I tried Macri and Reflex, and it worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of proves that.
Yeah. So there are other, I know you bought Acronis. It's a good program, but there are other imaging programs that may not have that problem. For instance, Ease US has a free one, easeus.com, easeus.com. Drivesnapshot.de. There are other ways to do this that don't use Acronis. It seems like a failing of Acronis. It just doesn't have the right driver. That's why I can't see your hard drive. Pretty simple. Strange. And Windows has its own, by the way to do it. What your Acer has is a recovery partition. Before I would do anything else, and this is true of most modern computers, they have recovery partitions on them. So if something goes wrong, there's actually a Windows installer on the hard drive. But Steve has a good point. What if the hard drive dies? All of them will have a way of making a recovery disk. And my suggestion is the more modern computers will let you do it on a USB key. Here we go with that USB key again, that thumb drive. I think you need a 4 gigabyte. You might need an 8 gigabyte. They're pretty cheap. Get an 8 gigabyte thumb drive. And make that a recovery disk. Now the beauty of that, and I have hanging on my office wall at home, I have a tree of thumb drives from all the operating systems I use: OS 10, Linux, Windows, Windows 7, and Windows 8. And I can literally boot those up and run them, and I can reinstall on any drive. So I think that's the best way to do it. If you're worried about your hard drive dying, even if you're not, you should be. You should use the built-in tool. It's in the accessories that will automatically make your recovery disks, and then you're done. And if you want to image your existing setup, Windows has its own imaging that you can just make it that way. I think this is just the easiest way to do it. 32 gig USB 3 key for about $50 works great. Padre SJ and I both have Acer S7 laptops. He's in our chat room. He's saying he tested it on his Acer S7. He was able to do a full restore of Windows in about 6 minutes. That's because it's USB 3. If you're lucky enough, you have a USB 3 computer. I love USB 3, but get a USB 3 thumb drive. $50 for 32 gigs. Come on. Larry in San Diego. I'm really curious what Larry wants to know. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Larry. Happy Father's Day. Hi, Leo.
Yeah, happy Father's Day to you.
Hey, I have a question about website security questions, but not the normal kind where they tell me the question, I give them the answer. Recently, I started having websites ask me questions that they're getting from some sort of third-party database.
Yeah.
So yeah, they ask me...
These are not the same thing as your secret questions, which are designed to give you access to your account if you forgot your password, which, by the way, is a horrendous system and should be banned immediately from every site, especially banks. But what this is more like is the CAPTCHA. Have you ever seen a CAPTCHA where they show you weird-looking text all squiggled up and you have to type it in?
Yeah, well, the problem I have with these things is that they're asking the information that's coming from sources that I never really said had authoritative information about me or that
Wait a minute. They're asking questions about you?
Yeah.
All right. Is this in context with a credit application or some sort of financial transaction?
No, it's, for example, I'm logging into my insurance company's website.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is a third kind of question. And you see this from time to time. Did you ever live at one of these three addresses?
Right.
Was this ever your zip code? What they're doing is they're pulling information from credit reports. And they're trying to validate that it is you based on the information they know about you from the three credit reporting agencies.
Right, and so I have a couple problems with that. One is that there's a bunch of garbage data on my credit report that I never needed to care about before until they started asking me questions.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you ever live at this address? No, but I know that you think I did.
Exactly.
So yeah.
The other thing that concerns me about that is I feel like in a bigger context, it seems like it's getting people used to the idea that, well, this information that you probably used to think was private and you never needed to worry about anybody knowing it is now something that, oh, by the way, that's basically public information that we're giving out to everybody or selling to
them. It is public information. It always has been. So it's not it is public information. For instance, now, which, by the way, begs the question, is this a very good security system? No. The problem, you know, it's not hidden information. For instance, when you buy a house, that is recorded publicly at the county office, and anybody can see that. And lately what's been happening is database companies have been sending humans to the county recorders all over the country and digitizing that information so it's digital. So now not only does your credit agency know it, but it's on a database like Spokio. That's what one of the companies that does this, .com. So it's a poor idea for security. Companies do this because they know people forget their passwords, and they need a way to validate that it's you. I believe that if those questions have garbage data in them, I don't remember, but I think they will provide you somewhere on that page, hey, if this isn't working, call us. They're trying to validate that you are who you say you are, and the thesis is, well, only you would know this information, but the fact is that information on your credit report is very widely distributed. A lot of it, like where you used to live, is public record. You probably should go into your credit report and clean it up. That would be my first suggestion. Because if there is erroneous information in there, that you want to get rid of. It is not a good system, but it's marginally better than the secret question system, which is an even worse system. J5 in our chat room says two of his banks are switching to this logon scheme. You see, banks do a lot of silly things. You know, that image that they show you. Lots of crazy stuff. These are all bad ideas. But it's a signal to you. You should clean up your credit report. Get all three credit reports. Make sure everything in there is accurate. And that's, you got to deal with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Father's Day. I hope you're having a great Father's Day. A tip of the hat to my dad, Leo Laporte Sr., and to all the fathers out there. And a happy birthday to APOD. John Slanina, my studio manager, is a big fan of the Astronomy picture of the day, apod.nasa.gov, and it's celebrating its 18th birthday. I didn't even know there was an internet 18 years ago. It was very early days, 1995, that the astronomy picture of the day first went on the World Wide Web, and it was early, only 14 page views on day one. They now estimate that the APOD has served over 1 billion space-related images over the last 18 years. It is a great place to go for desktop wallpaper and so forth. Here's the very first page, the astronomy picture of the day. Wow, this looks like the web of 1995, doesn't it? Everything left justified. The picture itself, yeah, not great. I can see why they only got 14 hits that day. Congratulations to its creators, Robert Nemiroff and Jerry Bonnell of astronomy. And you can go back all the way. A great source for beautiful, beautiful images. Here's a four-planet sunset. Wow. That's gorgeous. My name is Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO is my number, 888-827-5536. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. I talked yesterday a lot about PRISM, about the spying efforts of the U.S. government. A lot of what we speculated and what my friend Steve Gibson speculated on Wednesday on his Security Now podcast has now been proven true, or we believe that the evidence is strong. Article in the Washington Post today kind of confirmed this idea that the NSA has been collecting data, all electronic data and all phone calls, all of them, contents and everything, for a while now, storing them in a big pile somewhere. They're building a multi-million dollar data center in Utah, which will be online soon, that has enough room for 5 zettabytes worth of data. I'll have to do some calculations to know how many days of data that is. They don't listen to it all. They probably scan some of it in automated fashion, but the idea is they store it in case they need it later so they can use it later if they think something bad's going on. The NSA says, oh, we only do this on calls from the U.S. to foreign countries. Not true. They get it all. And it seems pretty strong evidence that they do that now. So, you know, I guess it's a good thing to know. They're listening. They're listening right now to what we say. When you call me, they're listening to that. They're reading your email. I think it's time to write your member of Congress and say, we're not going to take it. Yeah, we want to be secure, but I don't think that's necessary, is it? And as Ben Franklin is so often quoted, he who's willing to trade a little liberty for security deserves neither. Terrorists win, I think, if we let them do stuff like that. So if you have a feeling on this, and apparently it's not, the majority of Americans don't care, don't mind. Hey, you know, it's the government. What could possibly go wrong? They're safe. They're not going to do anything bad with it, malicious with it, malign with it. No. They're collecting it all. They've got it all. And they continue to do so. They're already members. So there are members of Congress like Ron Wyden who are getting very upset. And I think we should write to your member of Congress. An email won't do. Best to call the office or send them a postcard with a local postmark so they know you're a constituent. Say, this will not stand. You've got to do something about this. It's time to get the NSA to stop. 8888-ASK-LEO, John in San Diego. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's San Diego.
Yes. What did I say? San Diego. Yes. I said San Diego.
Okay. I'm a longtime listener. I just wish I could remember everything.
That's all right. I can't either. So we're in good shape. That's what I got the chat room for. They remember everything for me.
That's good.
They're good that way.
What I called about and what I'm interested in is a program to record movies and sporting events online. And there's various ones out there, but I hate to spend the money unless I can get a good one.
So the issue is that most of that stuff is they don't intend for you to record it. So you're watching a live stream. One of the reasons they do live streams as opposed to, you know, make it available for download or something is because they don't want you to save it.
Right. That's what I want to do is save it.
And in many cases, it's Flash and so forth. There's a company called Applin, Applin.com, that makes... You're on Windows, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That makes a suite of tools, a variety of different tools designed to do exactly this. They will capture streams. They'll even capture Skype streams, music streams, and video streams. Convert it to a format that you can replay it. It's called the Replay Media Catcher. And it'll save it all. You can try it for free, and I would recommend, you know, the free trial before you buy. They even have it looks like they have a Mac solution now too, which they didn't have before. So go to Applian.com and look at the various things. I would recommend a free trial before you buy because I want to make sure it'll do what you want it to do and the quality you want and so forth. And, you know, it may not, you know, in theory, it's possible to tell these for these streams to say, don't save this. But I think Applian ignores all of that. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's move on to Shelley in Los Angeles. Hi, Shelley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Shelley.
Hi.
Hey.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
Thanks. I have a really big problem in that whenever I type anything into something that's web-related, so let's say the Google toolbar, half of the characters, if not more, come up wrong.
That's not right.
Leo Laporte. Yeah. I attempted to type in Leo Laporte and his website. So I got Leo Laporte, AEDRISWELSIBE. Now, I don't type well, but that's really far off. And it's only when it's web-related, because if I go into a Word document and type the same thing, it's fine.
Wow.
And it's only on this computer, not another computer, because I have two side-by-side. And I'm scared.
No, don't be scared. You changed your keyboard mapping accidentally, or maybe it happened by accident, I don't know.
Well, I had a Dell Pro Support look at it, and they went into the language thing and checked that, and they said it was fine.
It sounds like you changed it from a QWERTY keyboard to a Dvorak keyboard.
Okay.
But, you know...
Even though it's only web-related and not when I...
Yeah, that's right. That wouldn't make sense, would it? But so that's why it's not in your Windows settings. It's probably in a browser setting somewhere. Yeah. So what browser are you using?
It happens with Internet Explorer or Mozilla.
Oh, interesting. Both browsers. Huh.
Yeah, I was trying to think ahead like you do and check these things.
You're doing, boy, I'm impressed. Good job. You've done all the things I would suggest, which makes me depressed because now I have no solution for you.
Oh, no.
You've tried other keyboards? Have you tried other keyboards? No, I'll solve it. I will. I won't. Hold on. We got to take a break. We'll see what we can do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my good friends at stamps.com. Do you go to the post office? You know, if you go, it can be a big time sink. And if you're in business, sending an employee over there to find parking, go get stamps, or worse, charge up the postage meter, that's costly. And why do it when you can buy and print your own legal U.S. postage on demand 24/7 from stamps.com? Now, this is probably not for somebody who's just mailing out a Christmas card list or a postcard or two. This is for the pro who's doing lots of mailing. Our business, we have two accounts because we fight over it. it's great. I could come in here and get stamps printed out. When we mail a package, we plop that package on that great USB scale, and it says immediately, you know, how much the postage is. It even suggests various, you know, the appropriate class of mail. Kind of smart. Fills out forms if you're sending international mailings or if you want to do priority or express mail, it'll do all that for you. Even email the recipient with a tracking code. It's so much better than a postage meter. In fact, you'll save up to 80% over the cost of a postage meter. Postage Meter Ink, I didn't know this because I never had one, but Postage Meter Ink is about 100 times more expensive than inkjet ink, which is already pretty expensive. There's no reason for it to be expensive. There's no magic ink reader at the post office. You can use your printer and your computer and stamps.com. No long-term leases, hidden fees, no expensive inks, no postage meter. You got to try it. And when postage rates change, it's automatic. Stamps.com always knows. No extra charge for that either. 24/7 postage on demand. It'll pull your addresses, your recipients' addresses from all the popular PC address books. It'll use cost codes to track postage spending by different departments. Automatic address verification, even postage discounts you can't get at the post office. Post office loves stamps.com. Even discounted package insurance, all with one click. Certified mail, return receipt, international customs forms automatically printed out by stamps.com. And then the mail carrier comes to you and picks it up. You don't have to get up from your desk. Look, we've got a special no-risk trial. Click the mic, go to stamps.com, and there's a microphone. And you might say, oh, $80 offer, I'm going to take that. No, click the microphone. Just do me this favor. Just trust me here and enter the offer code TECH space GUY, tech guy, two words. That $80 offer turns into a $110 bonus offer. It's a really good deal, including $55 in free postage. And you get the scale and a 30-day trial of stamps.com. Remember, use the offer code tech guy. Click that old-fashioned microphone and get that special offer. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo's the number. We're talking to Shelly in Los Angeles, whose keyboards are doing strange things, but only when she's in Firefox and Internet Explorer. Works perfectly well in Microsoft Word. But for some reason, some, not all, of the keys are remapped in those browsers. And I have all sorts of suggestions from the chat room. I had to throw this one to the chat room because I have no idea what's going on, Shelley. One possibility is that there's something on your system, a toolbar or some additional thing that's screwing you up. Do you have the Google toolbar on there, by the way, or something like that?
Yes.
Ah. You do you?
Yes. But I've had it for a long time.
Hmm.
It's not new.
Okay. Well, there is a Google toolbar that's real, and there's one that's not real. There's one that's malware. So first thing I would do is disable all the toolbars you can. Firefox does not have a Google toolbar.
Okay.
So if you have a Google toolbar in Firefox, that's probably not the real Google toolbar.
Okay. That's possible.
Yeah. At first, I thought you'd hit the numlock key. I do this all the time. And what happens then is you get numbers where there should be ERT, DFG, CVB, but that's not it.
No, no.
Because you're not getting numbers for one thing.
Right. And none of those symbols or anything.
Yeah.
Either.
Have you tried a different keyboard, just plugging in a different keyboard?
Yes.
And the same thing?
Yes.
So it's definitely software. Because it's not system-wide, it's not something global. It's in those browsers. And, of course, there's always nervousness about browsers because that's how you get on the Internet. And that's the kind of place a bad guy would want to go.
Right. Well, the Dell Pro people allegedly, you know, did a malware search and did a clean whatever. And, you know, it came up. Two viruses did come up, but they cleaned them off and they said you should be fine.
I'm going to turn over another card. Is your internet service provider Comcast?
No.
Okay. I'm glad the Dell people sound like they did the right things, but they didn't solve it.
No.
Did they? What did they say at the end of the call?
Well, I thought it was solved, but apparently it wasn't. So it's almost like it maybe went away for a few minutes and came back. I don't know, you know.
It's kind of a mystery, but I have to say it feels like something is wrong.
Like a virus wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm afraid of that.
Yeah, and a virus scan may not show up, or a malware scan may not show up a toolbar, because these toolbars are, you know, something you installed. I would unload all those toolbars just in case.
Okay.
The other thing I would try is log out of your account. Do you have any other accounts on the computer?
Like, what?
You know, well, when you first turn on the computer, you may be automatically logging in, but it's possible to log into multiple users. What version of Windows are you using?
7. No, yeah. Only one user.
There's, yeah, so,
one
user. So maybe in your user, which means you're administrator, create a new user. Just create a new one. Call it Ghost. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Dummy. And then log out of your account. There's under the start menu, there's a log out command. And yes. And log into this new account and run Firefox and see if the same thing happens.
Okay.
Because what it'll tell you, I don't think it will, which means it's something on your account, something that's installed or something. You're switching profiles. And I think that's something I would just try.
Okay.
Yeah, and it may be that there is something going on with your keyboard mappings. That might fix it as well. It's a mystery. We don't know. You know, this is something where you'd bring it in if you had a good. I wish there were like a directory of these people are good techs and they can really help people. There isn't. If you could find a good tech, if you knew somebody, you know, at some computer store down the street that could just like a shade tree mechanic that could say, oh yeah, because what needs to happen is a lot of trial and error.
Oh, you know? I would pay. Believe me, I have a small business and I need this desperately.
Yeah, and it's weird. Try running Firefox in safe mode. If you Google Firefox safe mode, it'll tell you how to do that.
Okay.
And what that'll do is run Firefox without any toolbars.
Okay.
And then if that works, then we know it's a toolbar that's causing it.
Right.
And then you can try something else. You might also try installing Google Chrome, which is an excellent excellent browser, and it may not have that problem. I think if you restart Firefox in safe mode and it works, then that also tells you something.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry it can't be more specific. These are the kinds of things that shade tree mechanic would try. Say, well, let me see. Let's try this in safe mode, see what happens. Let's log into a different profile.
Helpful.
Yeah, I hope it
helps.
Thank you. Huh. That is a mystery, isn't it? If you know, if you think you know, here's what we do. We put all these calls up on the web. For free, there's no, you know, login or anything. You can go there anytime. TechGuyLabs.com. We do a first pass during the show. James DeRuvo's listening right now, writing this all down. He does a great job. Just getting the basic skeleton of what went on. And then after the show, Josh Windisch in my office here, we make a YouTube video of the show. Post that on YouTube. And then he adds each question and answer pair, a little clip from YouTube for every question and answer. So you'll be able to go to half past the second hour of show number 988, and you'll see Shelley there, and you'll see her question and my answer, and he'll be able to listen and watch the audio and the video. And then there's a comment section. If you have another suggestion, I'd love it to just, let's put every suggestion, everything we could think of there. And it helps not only Shelley, but we have a good search engine, and so after the fact, if people have a similar problem, they could find this, and maybe it'll help other people as well. Because I don't know, and maybe you do. 8888 Ask Leo. That website, techguylabs.com. While you're there, you can get into the chat room too. That's my brains. I got 1,000 people in there who tell me what to say. Coming up in just a bit, it's our photo guy, Chris Marquardt. He's going to myth bust another photographic myth. And then we'll get back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Call us now, and Heather will pick up and say hello, and maybe you'll be next on the show. We've got to, you know, it's kind of like a big user group. If I can't answer, and that's not unusual, there's great mysteries out there. Somebody in the chat room, somebody on the web, I don't think there's any problem we cannot solve. We've got a bunch of shade tree mechanics here. 8888 Ask Leo, and the website techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. When we come back, Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, and then our next call will be Dennis in Los Angeles, who is looking for a video and something else camera. Not sure what. Video and something camera. Stay tuned. Dennis, you're next. Then Shelby, Sean, Harry, Joe. You're all coming up. Leo Laporte on this Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to y'all. The Tech Guy. There he is, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. All the way from Germany. Going? Are you hearing yourself back now? Is it all clean?
No, everything is good. The sound is wonderful.
Thank goodness. We figured out the button to push. So, hi, Chris.
Technology. It's all difficult, right?
How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing wonderful.
We're going to do a photographic Mythbuster episode here.
Yes, we are. I brought you a myth. Actually, I didn't bring a myth. It's Richard Wober, a guy from Germany, who sent me this. And I found this so good that I had to bring it on the show. It is, the myth is, light is there to make a picture brighter.
Light? Wait a minute. That's not a myth. Light is there to make the picture brighter. That's true.
Well, it will make the picture brighter. If you add more light, it will make the picture brighter.
Yes, that's the definition.
Light in photography. Yeah, well, yes, at least to a certain extent it is. But light has a lot of additional functions in photography, very, very important functions. If you go to tfttf.com/lightmyth, I put a few photos on there. We won't need them for the radio show, but if you want to show something while we talk. So let's start with what kind of information light carries. It's not just bright. It carries, for example, information about the time of day when the picture was shot. And very simple.
Morning is obviously a different light than afternoon.
Yeah. Mornings have cooler light. If it's warm light, if it comes in at a low angle, this is most likely evening sun, the golden hour, right?
Right. Which is what every photographer's favorite time.
Yeah. Well, at least if that's the mood you want to convey. Yeah. So light has that information. It has a temperature, or what we call a temperature means the color cast. It gives you information on when the shot has been done, and what kind of a weather was there, for example. If you see harsh shadows in a picture, very harsh shadows under trees or on the side of buildings or in faces, it is sunny day. The sun is out. There will be harsh shadows. If you see very, very soft light, you can pretty much, it's almost guaranteed if it's outside that it's a cloudy sky. It's an overcast sky.
Yeah.
So without seeing the sun or without seeing the sky, just the light itself conveys that information.
That's really true. Here's that beautiful image from base camp as you go up to Mount Everest. You took this, I know, a couple of years ago, of a single light in a tent.
That's a picture so early in the morning, 6 a.m. There are tents. Everything is kind of bluish, which gives you this information about it's probably night. It's dark and bluish. You see this in movies all the time.
Sure.
If it's night, it's usually dark and bluish. And
I can smell the yak butter tea just brewing right up there.
There was certainly yak butter tea involved in that picture. Then it will also give light. Will also give you information about location in a picture. Where are you? Are you inside? Are you outside? Is there tungsten light or is there a cooler outside light? And you, again, will be able to deduct that from the picture, to see that from the picture without seeing the actual light source.
Photography means literally writing with light.
Painting with light,
painting with light.
And another thing that light does it gives you information about what is important in the picture, because believe it or not, brighter things in a picture will be more important to the viewer.
Right.
The viewer will be, we're almost like moths, you know, we are drawn to the bright thing in the picture.
Right.
And so if you want to give something importance in the picture, make sure it's well lit, there's light on it, and maybe it's surrounded by things, a background that's a bit darker. So light gives you that information too.
Yeah.
And then light will also give you information about shapes of things. Light will define shapes. For example, this is a very good example. This is a car. And a car is a shiny object. So how do you show the shape of a car? In this case, it's a light source behind the car. If you shoot pictures of a car and you use the flash on your camera and just shoot right at it, this won't look interesting. But if you have a light source behind it that then reflects off the edges of the car, it will define the shape of the car. It will give you a much, much more interesting picture. So the light behind things is often very good to help define shapes and even textures. If you let's say you have a rocky path, and it's the sun skims right over it, then all of a sudden you will have a lot of texture. The rocks will come out and they will give you these little shadows. Or a brick wall. Look at a brick wall and the sun skimming right along this brick wall in evening sun. You will all of a sudden have this deep, deep texture on the brick wall as opposed to it being very flat. So light also gives you that.
Wow. And we'll put a link in the show notes to your images that illustrate these ideas of light, because they're really dramatic, beautiful images. Time of day, texture. It tells a story. It pulls your eye to a specific. Here's the. It looks like a groom, and you can see the lights in the background, and that kind of draws your eye. You're right. It really makes a big difference. That's a key to
a lot of these pictures aren't even that bright.
A lot of them are very dark.
Yeah. So the light really gives you that additional information. Picture doesn't by definition have to be very bright. Sometimes it's about the light itself. The picture you're just showing shows just some lights,
like rain or
reflecting
rain
in a car window with the raindrops. Yeah. So all of a sudden, all you have is a few spots of light, but it paints the picture and it's enough to give you a full picture. Too much light in some of those pictures would just be too much light.
We have a photographic assignment. You could use some of this information in your pictures. Now, it's not a contest. It's not a competition. There's no prize, but it's a chance. It's an excuse, really, to take more pictures. What is our topic of the month this month, Chris?
Our topic of the month is green.
Green.
Green, now, just
be,
green.
Could be a color. Could be something else. Could be a concept. We're not going to tell you. But take a picture illustrating the word or concept green. Upload it to Flickr. We have a tech guy group. Make sure you submit it to the group. Put the tag green in there so we'll know to look at it. And is it next week probably we'll review these? In the next couple of weeks, certainly.
In the next couple of weeks. And okay. and this is really a great turnout. We have over 70 pictures already.
Yeah, there's some beautiful ones. Yeah.
green seems easy enough, but don't let that fool
you. I'm going to look for some green. Flickr is free. FLICKR.com. Join it if you're already Yahoo. You know, you have a Yahoo account. You've already got a Flickr account, and upload some images one a week, and we'll be looking at some of those in the next few weeks. It's not easy being green, but taking a picture, no problem. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. You can find Chris on the web at chrismarquardt.com. If you're interested in his workshops, he does workshops all over the world. Are you coming to the U.S. this summer?
This summer I'll be in the U.K., but I'll be back. people can come with me to Iceland next year. For example.
I would love to do that.
Iceland
I've so many photographers go there for images. I don't know why.
And we're planning another Himalayan trek in May next year.
Oh, you're crazy, man! Discoverthetopfloor.com for the workshops. Did you see the Mac Pro? I'm curious because you're a pro. You're a photographer. I presume you use a Macintosh.
My Mac Pro is 6 years old, so it's already slightly long in the tooth. So.
Would you consider updating it to this new black cylinder, this 9-inch tall?
Yeah, possibly. I'll have to look at the price tag, though.
I could tell you it's going to be $4,000 or $5,000. Here, I got one right here.
Are you sure? Yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah.
You got a nice copy there.
It's a good size. Heavy.
Yeah, the new Mac Pro, I'm not sure about the price tag because you will have to invest a lot in accessories,
a lot
in external enclosures. And
you're going to have to go Thunderbolt for everything.
So it means a huge investment if I really want to switch, because right now my Mac Pro has all the disks inside, it has the cards inside. Just an external enclosure for PCI cards is horribly expensive.
ChrisMarquardt.com. Thank you, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show, as always, is brought to you by RingCentral.com. We have podcast advertisers, which is great. Makes it possible for us to do the website, to pay for Josh Windisch, to have that great content, and to make the podcast available to you pretty much ad-free. And it's thanks to these guys, these handful of advertisers who really support the tech guy, and I want to thank RingCentral. They supported us in more ways than one. When we first built this amazing studio here, you think it's pretty cool, huh? Nice studio? Yeah. Yeah, 10,000 square feet. I had a little soul searching because I was making my employees use their cell phone for all the phone calls. We had in the You're laughing, but it's true. We had one phone in the whole, in the old cottage, one phone. I got a cordless so they could hand it off, but mostly they were using their cell phone. And Lisa said, "You can't, we can't do that. We're a business now. We got like 25 employees. You can't make them use your cell phone." And I did not want to go, I admit, I did not want to go to the phone company and get a PBX in the basement and all that cost and stuff. But fortunately, we have a very good consulting IT guy. I've talked about him before, Russell Tammany of Exponentia. And he said, "I've used RingCentral for many clients. They love it. It's cloud-based. You don't have a PBX or anything. It's, you just plug in. There's SIP phones. You plug them in. You add an employee. You plug in another phone. We tried it. We've been using it for almost 2 years now. We are so happy with RingCentral, and I want you to try it. RingCentral does it all for us. I mean, you can easily customize all the call handling. For instance, our producers get their phone calls on their cell phone. They still get to use their cell phone, but we pay for it, right? Which is awesome. Here, let me show you the video. We pay for the phone call, even if they're using their cell phone. They can do business text that way as well. So they could text from our 800 number and receive texts at the 800 number. There's also a new feature. They are always adding new features. And there's RingCentral conferencing now, which means you can get your own single conference bridge number ready for but this is professional looking. You know, you're not going free conference calls or something like that. This is like real pro bridge, unlimited conference calls up to 1,000 participants, all the features you'd want. You can mute participants, get a caller count, record them, everything. And it works with your desk phone or on your smartphone with iPhone or Android in the RingCentral app. Free app is great. Or a RingCentral soft phone, which will work almost anywhere. It's free with your monthly service. That's what's amazing. All-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per user per month. That includes long distance, lots of features. They've really got an amazing story here. I want you to try it. If you visit RingCentral.com and use our offer code TWIT, you can get 30 days free and they'll subsidize your phones even. When you buy one phone, they'll give you a second phone free up to 20 phones. That's a great deal. 800-543-9980. That's the other number. 800-543-9980. You don't believe me? Read PC Magazine's review of it. They gave it their Editor's Choice Award. So many big customers and little. And, of course, we're one of the most happy customers. So I can endorse this wholeheartedly. Give it a try. We've got a special number for our listeners, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com, use a promo code TWIT. And don't forget to ask for that free phone deal. That's a great deal. Ringcentral.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Have you seen? A lot of you did. The Man of Steel came out this weekend. The new Superman movie. Did you see it, Heather?
I saw it last night. I haven't seen it.
Wonderful soundtrack from Hans Zimmer. And the reason I mention that is if you have an iPhone or an iPad, there's a very interesting app that Hans Zimmer put together that demonstrates a new surround sound. Remember Scott Wilkinson was talking about this 2 weeks ago. It's out. It demonstrates this new surround sound technology that DTS has created. And it's really mind-boggling. It's called DTS Headphone X. If you search for Z Plus DTS on the App Store, you can download. You know what? I'm going to come over with some headphones and demonstrate it for you, Heather. Because mind will be blown. So the idea is you're wearing headphones, right? If we were a stereo show, I would demonstrate this. But I don't want people to drive off the road with amazement and wonder. Download the app on, I think there's an Android version as well, on your iPhone or your Android or your tablet, and then plug in headphones. And it can be any kind. They'll ask you, are you using earbuds, over the ear, on top of the ear, what kind? And then it plays, do the tutorial first, because it plays sounds in all the speaker positions. Now remember, you've got two speakers, left and right. But sounds coming from in front, they come from in back, they go moving around. And then it comes free with one song from the Man of Steel soundtrack, but you can get more. And Hans Zimmer has mixed it for this complete surround sound as it would be in a theater. And it's remarkable. Remarkable.
It's called Z Plus, right?
What did I say? Z Plus.
X Plus.
No, wrong letter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Z Plus, and it's on the App Store. Free.
Yeah,
but you could, you know, you have to, if you want more If you want more music, this just one, the first track is free. The best thing is a tutorial. Just blow people's minds. It's from Remote Control Production Z Plus. I'll come over in the next break and I'll put headphones on you. We'll get your unalloyed honesty. Wait a minute, we have it. We're gonna try it.
Oh, really? You're gonna
is that
use
it?
Me, like,
is that it, John? Well, yes. We use a guinea pig. John's
so
putting it on now. Okay, John, do the tutorial. He knows because he's the one who showed me. Z Plus. It's from Remote Control Productions. You can speak, Heather. You're on the air. It's left. It's right. She's trying to demonstrate this with her.
No, that really sounds like it's coming from.
It's coming from all around you. Is that wild?
Freaking me out.
Yeah.
Like I'm being followed.
Yeah. It is Z Plus Music from Remote Control Productions. It's a demonstration of a DTS headphone surround technology. Isn't it amazing?
Oh my God.
Yeah, see? An unsolicited recommendation. Scott was right.
Balls.
Now we're playing it for everybody in the studio audience. Who should I talk to next, Heather?
Let's talk to Kiki.
A deep breath.
Yeah, right. Kiki in Portland.
Kiki in Portland. Gigi? Line two. I have a Gigi and a Kiki. You can see my confusion. Hi, Kiki. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've enjoyed listening to you for years and watched you on the screensavers, and I think it's great fun that you have Heather with you.
Yes. Isn't that a nice addition to the whole enterprise? I'm not all alone in the studio. I actually have a person to talk to now and play headphones games with and things like that.
Well, I used to enjoy her on Dr. Dina Dell's show, too.
Yes. I feel so lucky to get Heather, to be honest.
Yeah. She's great.
As soon as Dean retired, I started harassing her. Plucked her from her comfortable position. What can I do for you, Kiki?
Well, I am the secretary for a small public organization, and I've been doing all their books on my personal PC using QuickBooks Pro, and we're thinking that I need to get a separate computer for the organization. I also use Excel. Now, my Pro is 2011, and my Excel is 2007 and Word 2007, and I'm using an XP. I'm wondering whether I can get a pretty good deal for a Dell with Windows 7, and I'm kind of leery of the Windows 8. And I can wait till fall if you think Windows 8 is going to get better and maybe the prices of the laptops will be coming down.
Yeah, the way you're going to use it is as a desktop machine. You're not going to be using the new modern interface, that full screen interface, because that's not helpful to you.
Probably not. Yeah. And I'll be having the computer for a long time, too. So I want something that will last quite a while.
Our finance people here often use dual screens. They want to see a big spreadsheet, or they want to have a spreadsheet in one screen and QuickBooks open in the other. And that's the kind of way you want to use Windows. And it has nothing to do with the new Metro interface or the new full screen apps and all that stuff. So, yeah, I would say Windows 7 is fine. Windows 8 will, by the way, respond. Windows 8.1, I should say, will respond to that in the fall. Microsoft recognized that people in business are just not happy. And so they're going to have a boot to desktop mode, which will kind of make it like Windows 7.
So Windows 7 will last a long time then.
Nothing wrong with Windows 7. You got 10 years with Windows 7. So that's most corporate customers are still buying Windows 7. I would even look at dual screen, absolutely. You might want to look at the new Microsoft Office 365, or I can't remember what they call it, but it's essentially a subscription plan now.
Is it all online?
No, it's just like before, except there's no disk. You download it and run it on your desktop, but updates are automatic, and there's no additional cost for them. It's a fairly low cost per month. You can install it on a number of machines. It's how Microsoft wants to do this via subscription instead of one big, pay outlay. You still can buy Office as discs in the old style, but this is the last time you'll be able to do that. And they really want you to move to the online Office.
And moving all of the old 2007 won't be a problem.
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah, that's one thing Microsoft does very well is what we call backwards compatibility. You should have no trouble there.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think Office 365 is great. I subscribed almost immediately. And they have a business version. I think it's $150 per user per year, something like that. It's very affordable. Well, relatively affordable compared to buying the whole package all at once. 8888, ask Leo. Now let's go to Dennis in Los Angeles. Hi, Dennis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm in the market for a camera that'll shoot both stills and video. You know, you go to events and I end up carrying around two cameras and it's just too much of a nuisance.
Every camera out there now shoots both. All the point and shoots, all the high-end pros, there are very few that don't shoot very good video. In fact, it's going to kill, I think it is killing the consumer camcorder market. Why buy a camcorder?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. It's confusing as I miss more of the shots than I end up taking trying to switch from camera.
Yeah, you got it. And a lot of these cameras have a dedicated record button for video, so you're shooting with your point and shoot, and then you press the red button, and then you're recording video now.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
What's your price range?
Up to 500.
Yeah, there are a lot of good choices. Probably the Nikon D5200 would be a good choice.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at that point, you can almost go for a DSLR. And boy, when you're shooting video, the ability to change lenses makes such a difference. It's such a difference. It's such a fabulous difference.
I could consider that.
Yeah, look at that. 3200, I guess, is the one that would get you in that price range. 52 is a little bit more. But boy, you're going to, you know, and now you're in the Nikon lenses, so you're going to buy good lenses. And when body upgrades come along, you just get a new body and continue to use those lenses. So it's all an investment.
Oh, that's all right.
DP Review has an excellent review of the Nikon D3200. Very good video, very good stills. It's their entry level, and it's excellent.
Oh, okay. Now, switching over, if you switch over to video, how much does that chew into the battery life?
It's not much different. It's just recording. Think of it as recording a lot of pictures. 30 pictures a second.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, you're going to fill up the card before you run out of battery, probably.
Yeah, well, that's right. Cards are cheap enough.
Cards are cheap.
Small enough.
And I always buy, you know, a second battery and a few cards for any new camera.
Yeah,
you just pocket that second camera. You'll never use a camcorder again. It's so much better.
All right, fair enough. And these all shoot. I take it in high depth.
They're all shooting HD, 1080p. Most of them have the choice between 24, 30, and 60 frames a second. That's nice. 24 is more film-like. 60 is really kind of super crisp.
Okay. Yeah. Well, probably better resolution than my eyes are.
Yeah.
So that'll work out.
No, you'll love it.
Okay, thank you for the info. Something on a personal note, please?
Yeah, sure.
First of all, I want to thank you for all the years that you've been doing this.
I got to cut you off. I hate to do it because I want to hear this, but I got to take a break. Leo Laporte.
Anyway, thank you.
The tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. We're talking about all sorts of things. Let's go back to the phones. I think I want to talk some more with you, the callers, the listeners here. Shelby in Hacienda Heights, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Shelby.
Hi there. I did a really stupid thing a couple hours ago. I was on my iPad and my email provider is AOL. Mm-hmm. And I got an email that said, hello. It was from a friend who doesn't usually email me, and I was kind of surprised. And there was a link, and I figured, well, she was sending me something. So I opened the link, which was really stupid, and I was on my iPad. Now my question, and I got a call.
Here's the good news. If you'd done that on your Windows desktop, we'd be sobbing right now. You did it on your iPod, nothing.
Well, that's really an interesting, that's a very long story. My question is, will it jump to my PC?
No, don't open that mail. Don't click that attachment. The good news is the iPad's not vulnerable.
Ah, okay, excellent. It was a good, well, what happens is I only get about 10% of my email. It will not come through on my PC. It comes through on my iPad. If I want to get something to my PC, like to print out or anything, then I have to email it to myself and it comes up on my PC.
Now, that's another problem for another day, but
I know. So
I don't know what's going on there, but the good news is it will not jump. Don't be very careful, though. That, you know, I would not view that email. I would just delete it immediately from the subject line in your piece on your PC, because there is that's aimed at Windows and it will infect a Windows PC if you click that link.
Yeah, it was very stupid. As soon as I did it, I thought
it was good. It was a good trial run because you did it on your iPad.
So I got a call 10 minutes later because I had responded to the person and they said, you just got to, you know, right. That was a virus.
You didn't. And by the way, this is why I'm always telling people, get an iPad.
Well, I'm very, very happy because of my weird problem that my email won't go to my PC.
It saved me there. For a lot of people, you know, if what you do is web surfing and email, an iPad is a perfectly acceptable choice. It's a lot safer.
I see that now, and I didn't know. I actually checked my Trend Micro on my PC. I did a
You're fine. And
there was nothing.
Yeah, you have to. You're very welcome. Mm-hmm. The key on getting a virus is that somehow the bad guy has to get you to run a program. Viruses are programs. They don't just pop, you know, sneak into your computer from your email. Somehow a program has to run. Now, there's two ways this can happen. One, you can do it. You can explicitly run the program, as in this email, which had an attachment. She clicks the link, and sometimes there's some what we call social engineering in there. It says, hey, I got a great video here. You click the link. It goes to something that looks like YouTube but isn't, and the page pops up a message. Oh, your flash is out of date. How many times have we seen that? You go, oh, yeah, that's probably true. It always seems to be. Would you like to upgrade? Yes. You click yes. Now you've run the Flash installer, you think, but it's not. It's bad guy's software. Bad guy has now tricked you into running program. So that's way one. Or maybe the link itself, which seems to be a link to a website, is actually a link to an EXE, a runnable program. And by clicking it, you run the program. That could be two. The other way is a little more scary and sneaky. And frankly, a little more common. The bad guy takes advantage of a flaw in software. See, the bad guy might be able to convince the software to run a program, not you, without even your knowledge. So this is why I say that some of the danger from email comes just in viewing it. If you're using a broken version, for instance, of Adobe Reader or Flash, of Java, a lot of programs that plug into your browser. And normally we have these set so that when the browser goes to a site that has, let's say, a PDF on it or a Flash video on it or, you know, a Java program on it, it just runs it. Doesn't ask you. Just says, oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know anything about PDFs, but I know a guy who does. It launches Adobe Reader and opens a PDF. However, there have been, as I said, broken versions of these programs that when fed a file that's carefully crafted by the bad guy, actually runs a program on your system. It actually executes, and you're infected. So you don't explicitly run a program. You go to a website, or you look up. Same thing can happen. If the email has that PDF in the email, and you have it set to automatically open and read PDFs, I bet you do. Have you ever looked at an email and there's the PDF, even though you didn't explicitly open it? It's just the contents are there, previewing it? Well, in order to do that, it has to run the PDF reader. If it's Adobe Reader and it's got a flaw in it, you're infected. So that's the more scary way that you can get infected. The good news is the bad guys pretty much attack Windows almost exclusively. I don't know of any over-the-internet exploits that can attack an iPad. You're safe. Plus, the way the iPad's set up, this can be a little bit of an annoyance, but this is why, is programs can't talk to each other, you know? If you get a PDF and an email on the iPad, you have to explicitly send it to a PDF reader to read it, right? That's intentional. That's isolating each program in its own little space to keep a bad guy from infecting the entire operating system. That's why the iPad is more secure. 8888 Ask Leo. Joe is in Sault Ste. Marie. Hello, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey, I'm asking for some advice because next year I'll be a senior in high school.
Congratulations. That's exciting. You're a rising senior.
Yep. And after that, I'll be going to college for computer science. And I'm just asking to see what kind of things I can do to get prepared for that.
I think a good thing to do. Do you know any programming yet?
I've done some Java and JavaScript and Python and Code Academy.
Oh, you're set. Code Academy is great. CodeAcademy.com. Free way to learn programming. Great way to do it. I'm thrilled to hear that. That's very good. You know what you might want to do if you've got an old computer lying around is put Linux on it and learn a little bit about the Unix operating system. Have you done any of that?
Yeah.
So you understand bash shell programming and how the underlying file system works, things like that. That's useful for a number of reasons. For one thing, Linux doesn't hide the operating system, doesn't hide the computer's operation as much from you as Windows and Mac do. So you can kind of see the engine working, and that's what you want to learn. It's like a mechanic who's never opened a hood. You need to get under the hood and look at what's going on in there. So you've already done that. That's excellent. Let's see. Boy, I think you're pretty much set. Have you done anything with networking? That would be the third category that's very useful.
No, not much there.
So that's another thing. You start playing with that Linux box and maybe some of the networking features on there to kind of understand a little bit better how it works, the firewall, so forth. All of those things would be very useful skills. It kind of depends on what you're going to be doing. You're not necessarily going to be a sysadmin or a network administrator. Programming is a great thing to learn just because you kind of have to understand how the computer works to learn that. I think you're in great shape. What do you want to do?
I'm really interested in Android. I've been doing some tutorials on XDA developers of making your own apps.
Excellent. Man, I love hearing that. Android is a very good platform right now. Any mobile platform would be good to learn about. And the nice thing about writing software for Android is all the tools are free. So you get Eclipse, download Eclipse, the Android SDK, start writing software for Android devices just to play with it. It's great. You're set. You're going to do great. Good luck to you, Joe.
Thanks,
so
Leo.
Step one, graduate high school. Step two, go to college. Step three, profit. You're set. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about this Google Loon project. Have you seen this? This is so wild. Google, they tested this in New Zealand this week. My friend Trey Ratcliffe got to ride in the secret Google helicopter and shoot pictures of the Loon balloons being launched. They call it Google Loon because it's loony. But maybe loony like a fox, if foxes were loony. Google.com/loon to learn more about it. The idea is putting up balloons at the stratospheric level. I mean, these are they're higher than jet planes. I mean, they're not in the air traffic area. They're like 10 miles up, riding the stratospheric winds, carrying internet access to remote places around the world, places that can't get online. 3G speeds. I mean, it's not going to replace your cable internet. Or your probably won't even replace your LTE. But for people in underdeveloped nations, in remote areas, it's better than nothing. It's just an experiment right now. But Google, plans to do this all over the world. They're launching balloons right now in New Zealand. And they're going to test it in New Zealand and then see how it works. And then if that all works... If you're in New Zealand listening to the show, go to the project because you can sign up to become a lunatic or something, a loon tester. Actually, if you're anywhere. No, I guess you have to be in New Zealand right now anyway. 8888 asks, isn't that wild? I admire them. What they're saying is, a lot of the world does not have internet access. It's certainly in Google's interest to get everybody on the internet. They make money when you use the internet. They just pretty much automatically make money on it. So who better to do this? There's no extra national you know, extra governmental agency that would want to wire the whole world, it's going to have to be a company like Google. I don't think the United Nations has a plan to do this. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Neil is in Anaheim, California. Our next call. Hi, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I appreciate the call. Heather is great. You've been a terrific and totally invaluable to all of us.
Oh, thank you. And now I'm no longer alone.
I have I'll make it succinct. It seems like I've been forced to change my Yahoo email account because they're like upgrading or changing or doing whatever.
Right.
It seems to have started early June, and
they're
going to complete everything. Like, you're not even going to have it if you haven't done it by July 9th or something like that.
Right.
So then within that context, there was like two ways to go. One was like, they called it not classic, but they called it basic.
Right.
Or something, I forget the other phrase. It was, something more enhanced.
Yeah.
So I went to Classic. I tried to add an email contact. And the only thing it would allow me to do was put the name and then the email and a phone number. It wouldn't allow me to put, for instance, a company name, any kind of a comment box. Now, when I say they, maybe it's my fault. Maybe I don't understand how. You know, I don't like this learning curve because I've been using it for about 15, 17 years.
Yeah, that's the problem. When you're AOL or Yahoo and you change stuff, you get a lot of people angry.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to go with Gmail, but I just, and I would, but I had time to work on that learning curve, you know, so I was using.
Yeah, Gmail's even more, believe me, more unfamiliar than the new Yahoo Mail.
So now I just want to really get, you know, at least productive on a basic level with my Yahoo email.
Yeah. So they're doing that to me, too. Everybody has to upgrade. You can no longer use the classic Yahoo Mail. They want you to use the new purple Yahoo Mail. But I got to tell you, I think you're going to like it. If you don't want ads, you can pay extra. You can also pay extra if you want to not use the web at all, but use an email client. You don't use, you use your web browser to get email, right?
Chrome.
Chrome. All right. You know, you could, are you on Windows or Mac?
Windows. Okay. Actually, XP.
XP. You could go to get.live.com and get Microsoft's Live Mail program, which might be a little easier for you to use, but you'd have to pay Yahoo. I don't remember what it is. It's not a whole lot of money to use it with Google, you know, the Microsoft program.
It's called get.live.what?
Get.live.com will give you a chance to get Windows Live Mail, which is, I think, the only version you can use on Windows XP. The other thing you could do is Google Gmail, which will do it for free. But the point of that is you're now using a desktop application that might be more intuitive.
Hmm.
Right? So Gmail will... Gmail could, for instance, get your Yahoo Mail, and then you could, you know, so you sign up for a free Gmail account. You don't give anybody that address. You continue to
use
it. I
think somebody set me up with that. Like, all my, I generally use my Yahoo email, but it seems to copy it over to my Gmail.
Yeah. So somebody set up a Gmail account for you,
right,
and then had it automatically gather the Yahoo Mail into it.
Right.
And then from there, you can use Thunderbird or Windows Live Mail to get the mail on your desktop computer. That interface won't change. It's a standard kind of application.
So you pay for that?
Nope, that's free.
Windows Live Mail?
Get.live.com, Windows Live Mail. Thunderbird is another free one from the guys who do Firefox.
Thunderbird's pretty good.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if... you have to pay to get the Yahoo Mail. I think they've changed. You know, they're changing radically, this company is.
Why did they do it? I mean.
Well, they want to modernize it, for one thing. Yeah. And
does it have to do with them buying this for a billion and a quarter, this other
no.
site?
No.
And what their target market is.
Yeah. No, Yahoo, you know, they have a new CEO who's really, frankly, the company's been dying.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have some properties that are successes. Mail is one of them. Yahoo Mail is still very big. So they're trying to save these properties that are not dying mm-hmm. by updating them, making them more modern, and one hopes more efficient. But it does mean a change to the user interface. They haven't changed the user interface, in more than a decade. So, I have mixed feelings about this. Times do change. People, companies do have to update their products.
Right.
I don't use Yahoo Mail. I have a paid account and all that, $20 a year, and I use it. But Gmail is free and more functional. The real issue is it's also got a very unusual user interface.
$20 a year is the getlive.com?
No. That's free. That's from Microsoft. The $20 is to Yahoo if you don't want ads in it.
Oh, right.
And stuff like that. But you don't need to do that.
Right.
The reason I recommend these desktop applications like Microsoft's Windows Live Mail or Firefox's Thunderbird is they won't change. They're kind of there's a standard way email looks on the desktop, and that's how they're going to look. You might get used to that and be more comfortable with that. I sympathize with you, but these things do happen, unfortunately. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This last question about the Yahoo Mail got me starting to think, and the chat room was suggesting different mail solutions and so forth. Given that all your mail is now being read by the federal government, and I think we can safely say that that's the case. All your, maybe not read, stored. In case they want to read it later. That might even be worse. Instead of, it's one thing if there's some analyst somewhere reading every one of my messages, crumpling it up and throwing it out because there's nothing interesting. Far worse, frankly, if they're collecting everything I do, and then at some point they decide they want to go after me for anything. Now they have a treasure trove they can go through and look for crimes. And since so many things are illegal... For instance, if you use a website and you violate its terms of service in some way, and there's all sorts of goofy terms, you have to use a real name. Let's say you don't use a real name. That's a federal crime. It's a felony. Now, most of the time, they're not going to do anything about it, right? If I use a phony name on Facebook and violate its terms of service, I'm not going to jail for 10 years unless I did something else. Right. And the feds are trying to build a case against me. Now they can go back through everything I've done online and try to find other things. They can build a case. They can use other stuff against me. And if you think that doesn't happen, we know we have examples of it happening all the time over aggressive federal prosecutors going after a young man named Aaron Schwartz because he violated the terms of service. That's what he did. He violated the terms of service of an academic paper publishing service. And they were threatening him with serious jail time. He killed himself. So believe me, they can be over aggressive. And if they want to get you, there are plenty of places they can get you. So the fact that they're saving this mail scares me more than if they were reading it. So the question is, what do we do about that? And I think that this would be a good time to bring out something I've been trying to do for years, which is encourage people to use encrypted email. It is possible for you to encrypt everything you do. Now, you have to, the other person on the other end has to agree to it, and you have to exchange public keys, not anything that would be useful to anybody, but those public keys allow, let's say Heather and I want to email each other privately. Not because we're up to no good, but because we don't want this stuff to be collected against us. And because on principle, we want to encrypt email. So what I would do is I would create a key pair for myself, a public key and a private key. And you'd do the same thing, Heather. You'd create a key pair for yourself, a public key and a private key. And you can do this with a number of programs, PGP. There's certificate-based encryption. All email programs will do this. Not web-based mail often, but all desktop email programs will do this. And if you want to do it in a web-based mail, there's programs like hushmail.com that will do this. You give me your public key. I give you my public key. It's called public because it can be given to anybody. It can be published. In fact, my public key is available on my website. You hold tight to your private key, though, because that's the key. That's the one that you use to unencrypt. You use the public key to encrypt, the private key to decrypt. So you can send me a message. You have my public key. It's on a little keychain. It's all done in software. You say, I want to send a message to Leo. Check that box that says encrypt it. And then using my public key, you'll encrypt it. Only the holder of the private key can encrypt it. And I have to have my private key and my passphrase. I type that in and now I can read the message to you. I could send you one because I have your public key. This is a very clever system. One that the U.S. government, by the way, wanted to keep out of the hands of foreign governments for many years.
And then is that something that would simply go into LastPass?
Yeah.
Right, it goes into your really difficult every time?
No, it's easy. You don't have to ever do, you know, yeah, exactly. And your email program understands this. You can go to GNUPG, GNU Privacy Guard.org. It's not as easy to set up as I wish it were, alas. PGP also does this commercially, but this is GNU Privacy Guard is free. If everybody started doing this, the feds would be able to collect our email. They'd know that you and I were talking, but they wouldn't know what we're talking about. They couldn't read the email. And more importantly to me, they couldn't store it for a later witch hunt. Hey, let's see what that Laporte guy's been up to. By the way, just by talking about this, you know, one might assume that they're going to start. If they haven't already created a dossier, I think this would be a good time to start.
Red flag.
Red flag. How dare he talk about encrypting email? Because we have the right to keep our emails private. That's why. So I wish people, you know, for years I've been offering my PGP. I think I took it off the website. At least I took the link off because nobody ever used it. But for years I've been offering this public key so that people wanted to send me encrypted email. They could. Nobody ever did. Maybe in future people will think about this. And I think we'll see. My guess is we'll see more and more ways to communicate privately. We've talked before about CryptoCat, CRYPTO.CAT, CryptoCat, which is a instant messenger client that uses the same public key, private key technology to let you chat with somebody. You have my public key. I have your public key. We have encrypted chat back and forth. Nobody but you and I can read it. So that's available for the Mac. It's available for Safari. It's available as a plugin for Chrome, I believe. And it's completely secure. You know, people thought that Skype was secure that way. I remember talking to Garry Kasparov, the world champion, chess champion, who had political ambitions in Russia and was so afraid of the Russian government that he said, I will not talk to anybody except over Skype because it's encrypted. And I don't have to worry about Putin's secret police listening in on me. Well, now we know. Yeah, maybe not Putin's secret police, but the USA was listening in. They got a backdoor into Skype a long time ago. In fact, they got a Mike. Here's a good one. Security experts have long wondered there's a secret key hidden in all versions of Windows since Windows 95. There's actually two. One is a secret key that Microsoft holds. The other, no one could figure out who has this secret key that's in all versions of Windows. Turns out, we now believe it's the NSA, that they've had a backdoor into Windows since 1999. They've been able to look at everything going on in your Windows software since 1999. The only thing, you know, Windows 3, 3.1, and very early versions of Windows 95 are don't have it. They put it in somewhere in Windows 95, the second service pack, or the first service pack. This research comes from a guy named Andrew Fernandez. He's chief scientist with a company called Cryptonym of Morrisville, North Carolina. He's been curious about the second key. And it turns out that in Service Pack 5 of Windows NT 4, Microsoft's developers forgot to remove the debugging symbols. They usually strip these symbols out before they ship the software. They forgot to do it this time. And inside the code were labels for the two keys. One was called key. The second was called NSA key. What a world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Some final calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get back to the phones here. Starting with Placentia, California. It's is it Som?
Yes.
Hi, Som.
How you doing, Leo?
Good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
All right, I actually had a couple of questions, but I think we're running out of time, so I'll just ask this one question I had about Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Skype ITC had an app that they offered for years called Crossover Talk, and they just took it off this year for some reason, and nobody knows why. It's just a missing app. And what it does is scans all the frequencies on the internet, and you're supposed to be able to talk to the other side, the other dimensions, or the spirits, or whatever have you. But they've had it for years. For some reason, you know, they just took it off. And there's lots of stuff up
well,
on
well, you know why they took it off? Microsoft bought Skype, and they decided they really didn't want to have a product that would talk to the other side. They probably wanted to be a little bit more serious. But I'm sure if you go to the Haunted Society, hauntedsociety.com, you could find out more. Maybe there's other solutions for talking to the other side. Wow. What do you... On Android, there's a lot of choices. I just like to make a call to my mom once in a while. I she's alive. Forget the other side. There is, you listen to white noise long enough, you're going to hear, Paul is dead. Paul is dead. Isaac in the OC, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, Isaac.
Hey, how you doing? Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you, too.
Right on. I can't believe I got through this.
Amazing. I do. I like to talk to my loved ones before they die. That's exactly right.
Well, Ozzy, right? I mean,
what can I do for you?
Yeah, hey, I own an electronic waste and recycling company in Santa Ana. I have about 20-plus computers running XP. Now, there's browsing the internet, basic stuff. Nothing. We're not reinventing the internet here. I'm looking for an alternative to upgrading to Windows 7. It's going to cost me an arm and a leg.
No. In fact, older computers, the best thing to do is to put them on Xubuntu. That's a form of Linux. It's free. It's every bit as powerful as any mainstream operating system, but it's open source. Right. Now, you've probably heard of Ubuntu. That's a very well-known flavor of Linux, probably the most popular, but Xubuntu is a version of Ubuntu that's designed to run on older systems like yours.
Okay.
I actually use it. I prefer it to modern Ubuntu because I really dislike the operating system's Windows manager. Ubuntu uses now something called Unity, and I just don't like it. But Xubuntu uses an older window manager called XFCE that's quite good. So
I'm I'm running Core 2 Duo kind of.
Yeah, it'll run great on that with Xubuntu, Xubuntu.com, and then there's Lubuntu also. That's a newer flavor that I haven't tried. That's Lubuntu.net. It's also lightweight. It's again, same idea. They take this open source operating system called Linux. They add a bunch of applications, word processors, things like that, to make it a what they call a Linux distribution called Ubuntu. And then these folks have applied some additional software to make it lightweight, things like LXDE or XFCE. These are simple desktops that don't take up a lot of space. Ubuntu is intentionally light. If you find Xubuntu bogged down, it probably won't be on those machines. But if you find it bogged down, you could use Lubuntu, Lubuntu.
And what about viruses and stuff like that? Is it
well,
the same kind?
No, viruses exist, but nobody's targeting Linux because it's 1% of the world, you know? So you're
right,
safe.
Yeah, we're using like, for our email, we're just using like GoDaddy. I just needed, you know, we're using, what are we searching with? With the Firefox stuff.
Yeah, well, all of these come with Firefox pretty routinely. So you've got Chrome as well that you can operate on. You don't have Internet Explorer. You don't have Microsoft Office, but you have LibreOffice or OpenOffice. These are free and open source versions of Microsoft Office that are very good. I think you'd find it's more secure, it's easier to use, and it's rock solid, and it'll run great on an older hardware.
Yeah, I'm right now we're using OpenOffice, and it's
great. Oh, yeah, well, there you go. You're halfway there.
Okay, so you would Xubuntu then?
Xubuntu. You might. I mean, you could probably run Ubuntu even. How much RAM is in those machines typically?
Minimum's 2 gig.
Yeah, for 2 gigs, I would use Xubuntu. It's not the processor speed usually. It's the size of the hard drive and the amount of RAM.
Awesome.
Got
awesome.
It. Hey, thanks for the call.
$1,000.
Yeah, open source. That's the way to go. It's free, as in freedom, as well as in free beer. Allison in Sherman Oaks, tell me, what happened, Allison?
Oh, Leo, I called you around the 1st of May. Computer hacked, called a bad system or company that restored, but they dropped something in. I cannot get it. Shot, O-T-S-H-O-T.
What's it doing? How do you know you're infected?
Oh, what Debbie was talking about, a previous caller, her typing goes bizarre. Mine's gone bizarre. It won't respond to my password sometimes. I mean, everything.
All right. So I'm going to tell you.
Let me just say that my computer, my phones, my cell phones, they're all tapped. And there is something going on. I do hope you do your reading. There is something definitely going on. Meanwhile, I don't feel secure in typing an email or anything. I can't get the yacht shot off. I uninstalled it, but it says we can't, on startup, we cannot load the skin. I don't even know what that means. And here's the little OddShot heart in the taskbar. So.
Yeah, OddShot is a virus. You do want to get rid of that. The only way to really get rid of this stuff is to start over.
I know.
And I would do that. Do you have your Windows disk lying around anywhere?
Yes, I do. And I also am going to call Carbonite.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's too late now because you don't want to back. I mean, unless you already had an account and you've been backing up.
No.
Yeah, because the problem with that is you're gonna have to wait a few weeks for it to get all the data up to Carbonite. Now you just what you really want to do is if you've got an external driver, just go down to the computer store. They're under $100. Just get a little external drive. You plug in, just copy your data over because you want to save your data. And then if you have your system recovery disk or a full window install, the key on this is to erase the drive first, right? So both the installer and the recovery disk will give you this as an option. And they'll even say, warning, you're going to lose everything. Warning, your data won't be saved. Warning, warning, warning. And that's fine if you've backed it up. So back up your data first. Wipe the drive. Erase it. Start over. Fresh copy of Windows. First thing you do is you run Windows Update and you run it until there's nothing more. Get every update. It may take a day. You may have to reboot a few times. But you want to get all the updates on there before you use it as a regular machine. Then you can install your apps, restore your programs, and then just be very, very careful. Now, I'm not sure about the tapping of the phones thing. That one's another story for another day, I'm afraid. Hey, good luck, and I thank you for the call. I thank you all for listening. I wish you a happy Father's Day, and I hope I'll see you back here next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thanks, Heather. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.